Greetings, friends, and welcome to yet another episode of the Grog Pod Roguelike Podcast, wherein each episode we roll the die on a roguelike game, sometimes landing on a nat 20 and sometimes with a crit fail, revisiting those high rolling games at the end of the year for a good old fashioned recap episode, everyone's favorite. I am your Piggy King host of the podcast, Scott Berger, and with me are my co-hosts, Emerging from the Purple Mist.
This is Will Wright, your sage with the most reliable deck.
And this is Colin, a very aggressive goose.
And lastly, Andrew Harshman here. You know, I got a soft spot for anime. I'm the Slice of Life-omancer.
Yes, this week we are talking the roguelike deck builder Dice-omancer, released relatively recently, October 9th, 2024. I believe this is a Steam exclusive, developed by Ultra Piggy Studio out of Beijing, China, that was founded in 2023, consisting of four people, two artists and two developers, whose only other previous work, I think, was a prototype for this game. That was an itch.io game jam game for the Game Maker's Toolkit game jam called Dice is the Way. And I think if you Google Dice is the Way, you'll quickly see, yes, this does indeed look like a prototype for Dice-omancer. Dice-omancer is published by, I'm going to say, Gamera Games, depending on your Godzilla fandom. Notable publishers of, drumroll, Dice and Sphere Program, Shapes with a Z, 2, Stay Tuned and a Half, roguelike deck builder, Shogun Showdown. We got TMN, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Shredder's Revenge, very well regarded. And weirdly, The Last Spell, because I think since the last time we covered it, The Last Spell has since changed publishers from the Arcade Crew to Gamera Games. But reasonably good portfolio there. Dice-omancer.
Reasonably good. Incredible. Last Spell, good stuff.
Dice-omancer, your average player, has about 18 hours of gameplay in it. And it rolls in on our roguelike popularity charts is the 230th most popular roguelike game with 4,394 total reviews. Will, you are compelled to describe what one does in Dice-omancer in exactly 999 sentences, unless you choose to change that number.
Well, I think I can roll a dice and make that one sentence here, and it's really okay. The very simple one sentence summary is that it is it's a worse Slay the Spire with some different mechanics focusing on this primary thing, which is rolling a die to replace any number that you see on the screen.
Now, I was very excited when we were going through the picking process and trying to figure out what game are we going to follow up Noita with. And batting around some ideas, it's a Will episode, so it has to be a roguelike deck builder. We're contractually obligated. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, there's like a handful of overwhelmingly positive roguelike deck builders. We've covered a lot of them so far. Balatro, Slay the Spire, of course, Inscription, Monster Train. But there's a few that we haven't covered. And I was very excited to see Dice-omancer on this list of overwhelmingly positive roguelike deck builders, which means it's got to be a hit. But I think looking back through some of our previous episodes, a game being highly rated does not guarantee that we will highly rate it. Looking back at some of our overwhelmingly positive whiffs, we have, I think Against the Storm is overwhelmingly positive, that I think I was the only one that liked. I think we were unanimous in whiffing on Brotato.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Cult of the Lamb is overwhelmingly positive.
And really?
I'm pretty sure it is. Check me on that.
We gave Cult of the Lamb fine scores.
Did you?
It was fine, but it was
a 7.
Overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, I guess like
it's a fine game.
What I mean by whiff here is like our like, you know, it's fine, not matching like the Steam level of like, oh my god, like I take overwhelmingly positive to be like, oh, you're gonna really like this, regardless of who you are. But I don't know that that's necessarily
true. At least one of you is going to love this game.
Yeah.
One out of four chance for sure.
And I guess that landed with Against the Storm. I will still kind of bat for 60% of that game. But yeah, I think
60%.
Like,
oh, wow.
but I was very excited because Dysomancer, I had played, I think the demo for it at one of like the Next Fest, Steam Next Fest events or something like that. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. It
What do
has a
you mean you
very,
played it at the Next Fest?
well, I went
On your
to the
Steam Deck?
yeah, the I went to the Steam
You went to Bellevue.
I went to the Steam Con at my desktop computer and I downloaded the demo along with,
Very
I
good,
waited in
very good.
line to download the demo, as you do.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. You had to wait in line. You did cosplay for it, which I commend you.
I'm wearing a purple hoodie right now. This and
Yeah.
ironically, this is somehow like
That's
a
your Noida
trilogy.
outfit? Excellent.
Yeah, this is a trilogy of accidental purple hoodie episodes that we've gotten between Noida and God, what was the game that we played before Noida? This, like, despite all of the Azure Dreams, did Azure Dreams have a purple? No, Rift Wizard. Okay, so I guess it's not a trilogy. For some reason, it felt like a trilogy
Close
of
enough.
I just kind of like blacked out Remnant and Azure Dreams.
Grogpod, your number one source for coverage of purple-robed games. It's a
Exactly.
burgeoning genre.
I like, yeah, that's actually a good name for a company, Purple Robe Gaming. I mean, I could definitely see that as a thing.
The P in
Absolutely.
pod stands for purple.
Yes, as we all know.
But yeah, the tutorial or the demo that I had downloaded, I'm like, oh, like this art style feels very unique, and the demo just kind of gives you enough of a taste that I'm like, okay. Playing through this little tutorial sequence, I'm like, yep, this seems very interesting. And then when Will picked it for this episode, I'm like, oh, awesome. Like I'm very excited to dive deep into the complex, crunchy game mechanics of this surely next evolution of Spire-like card mechanics. But gauging, but yeah, the but dot 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 gauging from our last 2 weeks of playing, maybe that has not resonated so well.
Yeah, that's I'd say an understatement. I think if we check the logs here about how we're feeling about the game as we're playing it, I'm not seeing a lot of, oh man, this is so great. I'm having such a great time. It's like I don't get this is stupid. This is why are they doing it like this? And that kind of feeling.
I'm checking my logs here. I'm seeing there's a lot of Noida updates for me,
Yeah.
which will be getting a reappraisal in the Omega Bowl. Yeah, well, hey, look, why are we getting off on such a dour note, here? There's much to be examined and enjoyed in this game. Hey, boys, we're back. We're finally playing another first person shooter, which is great. And whoo boy, there's a lot of weapons and there's a lot of art, and of course this game takes place uniquely from a first person perspective, as you are traveling across in this game. You are traveling across a exactly FTL map. It is
Yeah.
horizontally arrayed, and there is a force that is pushing towards you from the left
And
hand
you
side that
can
you're trying to
shoot a
outrun.
gun at a goose.
You can shoot a gun at a goose. If you've
Or
ever played
crossbow, or
Untitled
really.
Goose Game and thought, gosh, I wish I could just blast that sucker, you can do that. But uniquely, it is from a first person perspective, which is kind of fun. And the animations, like when you are casting and using your cards, which might be, different like sword attacks or crossbow attacks or cannon attacks, maybe. You are seeing your hands out before you, and this is all illustrated and drawn in a sort of a little bit sketchier, but definitely like sort of the Studio Ghibli type of
I really
aesthetic.
liked the art
Very
aesthetic.
cozy. Oh yes, visually very much enjoyed this game. Low
Yeah, like
FPS because I mean I just feel like yeah they're just like animating just a few frames for everything essentially.
I yeah,
This
and I think the
is
low
true.
FPS like it worked with the art style. It has like a kind of dreamy quality.
It feels like a 1930s cartoon, kind of. Am I wrong? Like janky low frame rate, like the big Mickey Mouse like cartoon hands. I mean, I could
Sure,
be
it's very
wrong,
like
but
exaggerated, I suppose, in terms of like the art direction. I'm sure that the small number of keyframes is probably, production
I
a
think it would have been
production
worse. I think
consideration.
it would have been worse with more with the smoother animation. I think that the
possibly
like type of it, like it, I don't know, has like a dream sequence vibe to me, like pastel colors, like cool landscape stuff. Like, I think it works really well with what they were going for aesthetically.
Indeed.
I don't think it really like, it doesn't seem to be particularly relevant to the gameplay,
sure,
but
sure.
I think it is good. And
yeah, and
one of the
I
reasons
coming
why I was excited for it
in terms of the dreamlike quality is kind of ethereal. Like, even when an object is sitting stationary, like there are different frames that sort of undulate, and the stroke lines that make up a character kind of move slightly, and sometimes I find that like inaccurate, kind of sketchy like quality to be off-putting, but in this case I think it works very good. And the low frame rate, I think you're right, complements that. And what is being depicted is what do we have here? It's vaguely anime in terms of art direction. I'm sensing seeing some Western and Eastern fantasy
pastoral.
It feels like a Mother's Grimm like fairy tale book with crossbows.
With crossbows, yes. This
yeah,
is
it's like Grimm Brothers crossed with Studio Ghibli.
Right, and you're traveling across the land. I don't rightly recall what end.
You've got three acts, just like Slay the Spire, and no spoilers here. By the way, you have all finished the game, right? Or like
absolutely
nope.
Not.
Nope.
God, how many hours do you have before?
Not that many.
I mean, I've got 8.6 in it.
God, Will,
did you
here.
Beat it on like your second run?
I did.
Yeah,
and
but that's because Will
Spliff
is
Wizard at work again, just yeah. Cranking out these games. He's a machine. The man's a machine.
I feel like once you've crossed it over into that Ascension 20 threshold of Slay the Spire, you're like, you can just like immediately see through all of the game mechanics for card games, and you're just like, no, I've already beaten it. I don't even have to play it anymore.
Yeah, if there was a different scale, then I might be like thrown off. Like right now, like the Slay the Spire, you know, attack does 5 damage. Like this one was just slightly like reduced. So your main attack, like the kind of basic attack, was 4 damage. But like that was easy for me to scale to like understand every single card basically immediately. But the point, like after you beat the final dude, the whole point of it is then you go fishing. And there is a little fishing sequence. And unlike
the tutorial is like you go fishing and then you come back from fishing.
Yeah,
or something.
I kind of want to talk a little bit about
the
tutorial because
I
think like the tutorial does a very good job of kind of setting the stage for like what this game is. It's very clearly like a Spire, like you have cards at the bottom and you play them. But I love that like the tone of the game is so like cozy vibes, like right at the start. We're like, prologue, hit the tutorial. And you're like, me, what a great day. Let's go fishing on the west side of the village. And you have this very cute, like fairy tale landscape in front of you. You got the Dutch windmill going on the hill, this little cobblestone path that, you know, just looks like something out of a cute little fairy tale. There's a town out in the distance. You're like, oh yeah, this does look like a great day to go fishing. Why not? Big poofy clouds. And then like all like normal fishing trips that you happen to go on, you go to the next node on the map and
yep,
you're encountered, your path is blocked by a drooling wolf that you have to, you know, take swords out of your pocket to slash to death. You know, like your standard fishing adventure.
Right. Like something right out of the Andy Griffith intro. An orc steps into the way and Gomer Pyle has to clobber it with a
Pyle.
Stick. Interesting that the interesting to learn that the ultimate goal of the main game is the same as the tutorial. That's fun. Well, that matches, you know, the whimsical, cozy core tone of the game, I suppose.
Which... Yeah. And so like it does like the very basic tutorial stuff of like, this is a card, this is how much it costs, it comes out of this mana pool. Yes, like things that we've seen a dozen times already in various deck builders and all that stuff. But I think it does a good job of like, if you've never played a deck builder before, then like, okay, yeah, it's kind of spelling out all the steps. The twist here is mana with color, though. So it like the first node you like
whoa, whoa,
beat up
whoa.
This
what
wolf.
Is this Magic the Gathering?
Never heard of it.
What is it? Is this MTG?
No, because it doesn't have the circle of colors. It only has a couple.
Mm,
or wait, okay. Actually, no. How many colors does it have, Will?
I believe it's 5.
Oh, shit. I just hadn't gotten far enough.
Watsy is preparing their legal notice now. Yeah, that is a twist. Scott, and how do you acquire these different manas?
Well, depending on the deck that you've picked, or cards that you acquire, the card itself will be titled with a background that has some kind of color to it, and you discard that card in order to convert mana in your pool to that color. For the 10 people that listen to this podcast that have played Race for the Galaxy, it feels very like that, where like you're using stuff in your hand to build up like an economy of things to play other cards with, kind of. And so like you're like using stuff out of your hand to pay for things that you will play also out of your hand, which I thought was a neat twist. I'm like, okay, like I can see how this will be interesting. And then after you've crossbowed this pig enemy, who I love that like some of the enemies will have like background sounds to them, like as you're playing, and this like beefy pig man who's blocking your path will just like every like 5 or 6 seconds.
It's disturbingly like accurate. I found it almost distracting. It's like his pig noises are too pig.
It's not just like a guy going oink. It's like they actually got the pig in the studio. But wow. Yeah, so you crossbow him like 6 or 7 times and you win that victory. You're like, okay, yes, I've learned the lesson. On to the next step. And that's where it started. That smile, that damn smile meme, a strange girl approaches. And this the little journal thing that pops up, I think is it fits the cozy cuteness vibe of the game very well. Of you have this little like almost picture book that pops open with like a little like hand drawn piece of art on one side. And it's an event. It's your standard event kind of deal. It says, I met a girl. She says, swords and shields are so boring. Try these goodies, and gives you a bunch of these purple cards. And these purple cards are kind of like your dice based rolling stuff. And then the player character says, what the hell is all this? And I can kind of sympathize. So then it kind of goes into the mechanics of multicolor cards that have like a mix of like purple and gray, or like blue and purple and some such things. Then you fight the pig king at the end of this tutorial. You're like, why is this piggy so strong? Like, all of his numbers, all of his attack damage, and all of his health stuff is like super over the top. You're like, oh, like clearly I'm supposed to fail this fight, which is fine. Like sometimes tutorials do that. But the little message pops up. It's like, you won't be able to handle all this. Here's something good for you. And it's a higher detailed version of the girl from before. It gives you the one dice card that can change any number on the screen. And doesn't even give you just one. Gives you maybe like a dozen of them. And a special like cartoon Acme Bomb card that does 99 damage to the enemy, but also to yourself. And you can use that as many times. So this, I feel like this is a good teaching moment of like, okay, how are you going to solve this problem? And I think this for me is where like the light turned on of like, I hesitate to admit that I lost this tutorial fight.
Oh, wow.
The first time. Because I didn't know. Like, I have like the one dice counter. Like, okay, like, what do you mean I can change any number on the screen? Like, any number? What? That doesn't sound right.
Any number? Yeah, let me just bump up my Steam played hours so it looks like I know what I'm talking about when I review this game. Yeah, and there's this fun like VHS pause effect where, you know, you get like the the interlacing lines kind of flash up and like, yeah, you can
scribbles
select
out the number when you do it.
It feels like a very fourth wall break.
Yeah, which I don't know. I think it's integrated well enough, but it's definitely cool. It's a cool, calling it a gimmick.
Gimmick is the word I think we
wow.
are.
Wow. I mean, I think
on.
It's pretty novel though. I think it's,
a gimmick can be novel. I mean,
fairly. I think it adds a fair amount to the game. It shouldn't be discounted immediately.
so anyway, you figure out the puzzle to like, oh, like I reduce the damage of the grenade. I use the cards to reduce the enemy's health bars. Kaboom! Like, I really love the animation of this grenade, where like you hold up this Acme bomb and then it's like nesting doll unfurls to like a smaller and smaller dynamite thing and then blows up. Animation's top notch in this game. But then it's like, oh, I saw something purple in the distance, and it feels like it's getting closer and closer. It feels wrong. I better run away from this. And instead of going from the right to the left in the tutorial, now you're running from the left to the right, backtracing to the previous nodes that you've gone through to get back to your original starter node. And then the little girl thing pops up again and says, purple fog keeps spreading. In the haze, I seem to see things not of this world. And then in quotes, the world is broken, hee hee. The girl appears again beside me. Because you used that dice card to change the numbers in this world, it's quite useful, right? Otherwise, you would have been beaten by the piggy boss. If you stay here, you'll be swallowed by these purple strange things, she says with a smile, even though it's a frightening thing. Escape this world with me. And I love, like, there's this weird dichotomy where, like, the sketch is, like, this mischievous, like, like, very devilish, like, oh no, what Faustian bargain have I signed up for? And then, like, literally the next scene is, like, this very, like, happy-go-lucky anime girl that's, like, feeling like, hey, welcome to my home. Like, this is the
lo-fi,
middle
realm. Lo-fi anime beats cozy core.
Exactly.
To roll dice too, yes.
And she says, the world we left is no more. But like, I can take you to countless almost identical worlds. However, no matter where you go,
some
you always
dystopian
have
shit here.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, there's a winky face emoji, so why not? If you can run all the way to the center of the royal city, I'll send you to a world where you can have leisurely time to fish. Good luck. And you're just like, all right, well, I have been sent to this like weird realm between realms of dystopian purple mist nightmare, and this happy anime girl's like, good luck, pal. you know, your standard fishing adventure.
Definitely a very wacky and unique concept for a story that you would only see in anime. So that also matches the tone in the presentation. So that's nice. Interesting. Well, I obviously should have paid closer attention to the tutorial, which I had to do twice, by the way. I didn't realize that, yo, the player caused the mist by taking the dice. Oh my gosh. That's good stuff.
And that's where I thought like the story for the game was going to be some kind of interesting, like Lord of the Rings style one ring corruption type deal where I'm like, I have this immense power. I need to like balance this immense power before it like I literally thought the purple mist was like Frodo's corruption as you're trying to like, and like, oh, I'm sure like clearly bringing this purple corruption to the center of the city is going to present me with some kind of choice of like, you know, do I cast the die into the fire or do I just turn around and say no and keep it for myself?
That is perhaps
you become
missed
the
opportunity.
King.
The new king, the dice king, the true dice-o-mancer. Yeah, all right. Well, that scratches one of the questions I have in my notes off the list. What is the purple mist? Oh, wait, there's a follow-up to
wait,
that.
Yeah, we got it.
Does anyone care about that? Does anyone... Yeah. Now that I've heard the storyline, again, it's a little intriguing, but it's kind of unfortunate to hear that it doesn't really go anywhere.
Yeah, the purple mist is essentially stolen from FTL, or like, I mean, I shouldn't say, I mean, like, I appreciate stealing.
Inspired by.
It's inspired by. I mean, I'll say steal. I steal game mechanics for all the time. But this one is just like, it doesn't really feel like it adds anything to the game. And I don't think that in FTL that it really did all that much either. Like the having the standard, like, I mean, it's essentially a Slay the Spire map, procedurally generated, except for sideways. And instead of like always going forward one node, what they did is they allow you to go backwards, and they have nodes that kind of like allow you to extend straight up or straight back to like get like just basically get one, two, maybe three more extra nodes between the start and the finish. And that all the purple mist does is prevent you from just like going around in a circle and collecting every single one. And so it's just like, why not just like, I don't know, like extend it by like, you know, maybe up to three, like rungs or, you know, three different levels, and this like add like a jumping mechanic where you can jump from one to another way anyone you I don't know, like they do that in Slay the Spire with the shoes, the flying shoes relic, and it's just like, yeah, that's essentially doing the same thing. You're just going to a different place, you're still forced to move forward, so you can't really go back, but like it's the same. In the end, you're getting the same sort of a feeling, and this one just feels so just bolted on there, and it doesn't feel good at all to me.
The FTL map is a lot wider So like there's definitely times in FTL where you're like, I'm going to backtrack through the like rebel area because I need to get back and through to the next stage. There's not really they're like looking at the map in FTL is a lot of like options, a lot of decisions. There's not really that many decisions. It's like, well, I could do this one extra thing.
I feel like FTL is more of like a web instead of a tree.
And that's because it's wider. I mean, that's the only, I think that's the primary thing here. If this one was
It's a
allowed
lot
you to.
wider, and then the relative pace of the mist or the rebels or whatever, the threat is slower. So
Now,
you can, yeah.
despite wearing a purple hoodie, I was too timid to venture backwards through the purple mist. Like, does the game allow you to go back through the purple mist? Is there any like consequence of doing so?
Has anyone who's ever played this game ever been caught by the purple mist? I think not, because it's that's the biggest problem for me is that it's way too slow and it's like never a problem. Why
So
is it
what
there?
ascension level are you guys playing on?
Ascension.
A big fat zero
This
ascension
guy over
level.
here. Right. And so this is where, like, so yes, when you're playing Ascension Zero, you're never going to get caught. But I assume, having not actually played, I played 8.6 hours, I assume that some of these ascension levels make it go much faster. And so this
Okay.
basically just means that you have to go pretty much in a straight line, which is just like, oh, well, then just make it slay the spire. So it's
Right,
like,
well that's not fun.
well, I
That's not
guess
interesting.
like
But I guess
the
we don't know for sure,
let me look
so
at the
before you
ascension
start.
levels real quick.
Well,
Yeah,
and
you're really
also
typing.
you can distort your cards. So if you use your one dice to make permanent changes to your cards, then it advances the mist faster. But I never ended up doing that.
I wound
You
up.
never distorted your cards?
I mean, I did, but not super often.
Oh,
Like
Colin.
sometimes I did, but like
Mistake
you have to
sometimes.
get beyond like
Backtracking.
the first level. Like you don't distort your basic cards. You have to just like you're not likely to get them to be better.
Well, once you get that juicy, thick D20, then if you
Oh,
still have any
20.
cards that have like, anything less than like a 10 on them, then I'm gambling my my card stability away for that. But I think that like one thing that I was surprised about when you distort those cards by changing the number and like then you use the card, it advances the purple mist. It advances it by like a pixel or something. I was picturing it that it was gonna advance it like a full step. And I was like, I was very like wary at first. I'm like, man, do I really want to advance the rebel fleet that much for using this card? And it was like this like big dilemma in my head. I'm like, all right, well, I guess I gotta, in order to beat this fight, play the card. And then it like I'm like, did it actually move? Like, am I crazy? And I had to take like a screenshot and zoom in, and it does move it by like a hair's
Enhance.
breadth. I'm sure there's things that like, like higher value cards that move it further. Or if you have like an insanely broken deck and you are playing like 150 cards in a row that do advance it, then I'm sure that scales the advancement factor a lot. But at least in my, playing, it didn't seem super consequential.
And
Yeah, I don't fully agree with all the concerns over the purple mist being brought up. However, yeah, it's unfortunately takes a lot of takes a lot of the oomph out of it when it's seemingly not super. It wasn't much of a concern really for my full like 6 hours. So I don't know. Let's maybe assume that it. What have you found in your research, Will?
There's basically not a wiki. I don't really see anything that describes the ascension
What?
levels at this
Oh
point.
my
That
gosh. Well,
well, let's just
there
give
is a
the dev
wiki.
the benefit of the doubt that,
There is a
I
wiki. It's all in Chinese, though.
Shazbot. That's what that was? Okay, I skipped right over that. Well, hey,
Google
speaking
auto
of
translate for me.
yes, thank God for
Chinese.
the auto translate feature, but
Speaking of
I
what
don't know if this is the same game. Dice
specifically,
Wanderer. No, it
that's
says
close enough.
Diceomancer dot Huji Wiki. I'm
Yeah,
trying to load
I
that.
think Dice
Which
Wanderer is
iteration of
the
Chinese? But hey, I'm glad you're bringing up Chinese, the concept of different languages other than the one that we have here, because at the translation. So we previously played a game that was translated, and it was also a card game, which was called Space Fight. It was called Three Rail Space Shooter.
Lone
It was
Star.
called, what was
Lone
it called?
Star.
Thank you, Lone Star. It was called Laser
Space
Spurs.
Fight. I want to play Space Fight.
Space Fight, developed by Purple Robe Games. All right, so in that game, there were some kind of major translation issues, and that some of the stuff didn't make sense mechanically. The mechanical terminology was not crystal clear, far from crystal clear. Now, with this game, I feel like it has a pretty good localization, pretty good translation, except for when it comes to the name of some of the enemies. I think perhaps I have a theory that perhaps somebody's having a little bit of a laugh. someone's pulling the hood winking, if you will, purple hood winking the development team, because there's some suggestive enemy names here. I mean, first of all, not to disparage past guests of the show, but there is a character made of wood named Woody. And then you got one guy just named Willie. you got a throat wolf. What's a throat wolf? The bush warrior. And then also we got Shroomhead, which might as well be Mushroom Tip. Am I right, fellas? Dysomancer? More like Dickomancer. I hate to say it, but somebody's got to.
Yeah, I wasn't going to be the one to say it. Because I didn't notice that, but
wasn't going to be the one to say it on their mind. It sounds like this sounds like more of an Andrew thing than
I wasn't going to say it because nobody else would ever have picked up on that. Hey, look, at a certain point in time, once I was like 30 hours into playing like Noita this week, 30 additional hours, I'm like, yo, I got to come up with some content for the podcast. I'm like, oh, I know penis jokes, great. But seriously, what do we think about the translation? I thought it was good, and yeah. In fact, I forgot garbage that it was tier. A Chinese game.
I don't know what Scott's talking about.
Go ahead.
I didn't realize it was a translated game, so it obviously couldn't have been that bad.
No, there are a lot of effects where you're like, okay, what is going to happen next? I want to plan this all out. Let me mouse over, check out what the intent is. All right, this is going to trigger when this thing happens, but unless this happens. And it was just like, I remember many times just being like, I have no idea what is about to happen. And like, you have to just kind of experience, like, that's what this effect means. Like, if you
don't think that was translation issue.
I
think that was just,
that's not a will issue.
I think it's just
the game to experience the diversity of characters and effects.
It's a rule book issue. It's like it's like when board games have like extremely verbose rule books, and you're
I've played many games that have been written in English that are also hard to understand what's going to happen if you do the thing.
Gotcha. You suspect that it was just poorly written to begin with, and therefore the translation didn't have a chance. That could very well be. Yeah, sure. For sure.
I feel like for the most part, the logistics of like how different effects proc other effects definitely felt a little overwhelming. And like, I thought that there was like, I was happy that there was a lot of stuff happening, but it felt like there was a lot of stuff that I had to like read and learn and internalize in order to understand what was happening. Where like first couple times, when like Will had said that, oh, he's beaten this game already so fast. I'm like, oh, well then like it has to be like super easy to play, right? And then I was going through.
That's what you would think, because Will could beat it. Interesting. Okay.
Well, I mean, you know, the king of roguelike deck builders, you know, so well trained, you know, I was thinking like, okay, well, surely, you know, it should be relatively straightforward to come to terms with. And I feel like on the spectrum between like Slay the Spire is very straightforward about like this thing does this thing, and it doesn't have like walls of text to kind of parse through. Slice and Dice, I feel like is maybe kind of creeping up there in terms of cognitive load. And then I don't really remember like Monster Train at all in terms of like how much cognitive load there is for stuff, but I remember it being on the pretty low end of the spectrum.
Monster Train is easy to figure out what each individual card do, but I feel like the difficulty then is in trying to figure out how the interactions are going to like scale.
Well, I mean, yeah, in Monster Train, they tell you what's going to happen by the end. And so they'll tell you, like, if you just end the turn right now, this is how much damage everyone's going to take. And so it reduces the cognitive load in a good way. Slay the Spire does not do that. But at the cost of, like, you have to still calculate, all right, well, these characters are going to move up here and then attack. And so you have to figure out a ways to, like, mitigating the moving through the levels. That's kind of where the cognitive load is.
So this game could not do that because of what I'm gonna help go ahead and say is my biggest critique of this game is it has dice in it.
Yep.
Oh
Dice
no.
are for someone who likes D&D a lot, I hate dice.
Well, let me ask you
Oh
this.
man, coming down
So,
hard the dice.
Colin, you've played Slice and Dice on your phone since, like a number of times since we've done that episode.
Yes.
That game is nothing but dice. Is
Yes.
the issue here that it's the combination of
Yes.
dice rolling and card drawing?
It's two separate sources of randomness, where it, like, you need some amount of randomness and you need some ways to mitigate that randomness. Slice and Dice has something where, you roll the dice and then you can re-roll some of it and you can do some things, and it's scaled around that pretty well. Deck builder Slay the Spire type games, I feel like each turn is a little mini puzzle, and this didn't, it made it too hard to solve the puzzle. Like, I don't like when it's you roll the dice and maybe you'll kill this thing, maybe you won't. And a lot of the cards synergize off of, like, getting down their individual hit bars. And so it's like, well, if I roll a three or above, I'm perfectly fine. And if I don't roll a three or above, I'm super screwed. And that happens a lot. And it's just, like, hard to predict what's going to happen once you click the end turn button.
You know what it is? We've all played XCOM.
Yeah, I was about to
Yeah.
bring that up. You have the same critique of XCOM.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't think that this sort of like percent chance, essentially, like if you got a shotgun and you're on tile away from the alien and there's no cover and you have a 95% chance of blasting him, you see the animation, you put the gun directly against his head and then you pull the trigger, when you lose that makes you enraged. And then the enraging side of that is not balanced by the, oh, you have a 5% chance to win. Oh, I got it. Yay. Because you expect that to fail as just in the way that you expect that to succeed. And so when you get the, oh man, it hurts so much more when you fail for these random checks than when you succeed, or than the good feeling for succeeding. And so,
Yes, but then we wouldn't have that cathartic moment of like the meme existing and us being able to laugh about the meme of
right?
the gun up right in front of the alien's head, 95% chance. We've all
Exactly.
been there. We've all experienced
Same
it.
thing in, like, Fallout, the 3D Fallouts, the Bat System, all sorts of comedy gold we'd be deprived of. I mean, I don't know, what are we to say, you and I, Scott? Like, no, you're wrong. Randomness is very important. Like, yeah, I get it. Like, it's this will be for some people, it won't be for others. Yeah.
Randomness
In
is
this
important.
type
Like,
of game, in this
yeah, the
type of game
randomness is
specifically.
important. I mean, I still very much believe that to be the case. And so, but like, there's different forms of randomness, and some of them are more fun than others. And so, what I mean is, like, when you're drawing cards from a deck where you're like curating the deck, it feels like you have, you've affected the what you're about to see. Whereas, so like the five cards you draw or whatever comes from the deck that you've curated to some degree. So you kind of get a sense of what's going into it. But like a dice roll, like, you're just throwing that, and it's just like you have no control over what you just, it feels like you're just tossing it to the wind. And so that kind of randomness, it sucks.
Well, my decks are so lousy that I need the help of just getting lucky and throwing a random dice. Similarly with Balatro, Balatro doesn't give you a clear readout of, like, what the final result is going to be. I'm sure we discussed it during the episode, but remind me, do we think Balatro would be better without any of those rolls and those random chances?
What I mean, the only roles that I mean,
Yeah,
the
there's not
roles are
much. Aren't there
like the
certain
one fourth
jokers that it's like,
chance.
eh, could be this number, could be that number,
I mean,
I
there's a couple, but it's not like a large part of the game.
don't know. Okay, so never mind.
I think, like, Balatro doesn't tell you what the final number is going to be, and that does mean that that's where the cognitive load exists, is that you have to kind of, like, get a sense of what all of your numbers m like end up being,
Cognitive
kind of order.
load, another release
I
coming from
think
Purple Robe Games.
one game that we
Also could be a dick joke.
I hesitate to call it like a dice builder, maybe more of a bag builder. Luck Be a Landlord definitely has like it is randomness colon the game, but it is also like randomness mitigation colon the game. And I feel like Balatro to some extent has like the more that I've learned about it since we've done that episode, the more I've come to appreciate its mechanics of like, okay, yeah, it is, you do have a lot more authority around your strategy. It's just coming at it from like a completely different angle. And with Luck Be a Landlord, it's like, oh, you have a lot of ways to like mill your deck. And you do have ways to like kind of mill your deck here in Dicomancer. Like you do have the very standard like cut the card in two, and it's a very satisfying like split of like the card. There are, I guess, like I don't, you're kind of deck milling by using the one die on your deck, and like your energy management and things like that. And where was I going with this? Oh, so like Luck Be a Landlord, very good at randomness mitigation. One game that we haven't talked about yet, a very possible stay tuned, that I think kind of does two sources of randomness, but very good at randomness mitigation, is Astraea Six-Sided Oracles, which, as you could probably guess from the name, dice. But it's like it's like a dice builder, in that like you roll the dice, you have like, I don't know, five dice or something. But as and there's this interesting corruption mechanic to it, that the more corrupt you become, like you'll take like health point damage. But the more corruption you take, the more options you have for like randomness mitigation. So it's this very interesting like push-pull dynamic balance of like, yeah, okay, like this thing is random, but ooh, do I want to like run the risk of like damaging my player character by re-rolling it? And so, to some degree, Slice and Dice also has that mechanic, but
Right, yeah.
more sort of spread out among the
So
characters that you have.
I think so the way that the one dice roll works is you build up points for each stage that you go through. And so you can't just use that dice every single time. I think it would be a more interesting game if those were used to re-roll the dice. If somehow maybe it was slightly less powerful and it's like, okay, you build up these points to re-roll the dice, and you're like, you get one or two rolls of it, so you
Reroll
get
what dice though? Like
the
is
one
it?
dice. So say I'm trying to reload my thing. I want it to reload it from zero to six or whatever, and I roll a one. Or like I want to improve this card. It normally does, like, there's a card that does zero damage eight times, and you can use the one dice on it so that it does between one and six damage eight times, and I rolled a one, and I was like, that sucks. This was an awesome card, and it would synergize super well with my deck, and now it's only gonna a little bit synergize with my deck.
But so you're saying
And
use the one die to make the change and then use the one die as again. So you're just talking about re-rolling
I
essentially.
got maybe some bad news for you, Colin. And forgive me if this is offensive, but are you aware that there's the one dice card, but then there's also the one dice relic up in the top left-hand corner that you can use multiple times, and you can just keep doing it if you
Yeah,
so desire.
you
So
can
great
save
news.
it
This mechanic you're describing already in the game.
up. Head in
I
hands.
only discovered it like recently
How
also.
activated
I feel
effects.
for you.
Yeah, so key difference here between this and Slay
Wow.
the Spire,
Okay, so
activated
I didn't
relics.
I mean I knew about activated effects. I know, like, oh yeah, there's the one dice thing, and then underneath it are the activated effects. I never clicked on that because
Yeah,
we're
I
don't click
don't
on
think they
things.
make it clear in the tutorial. And I've played the tutorial twice and it's eluded me both
Okay,
times.
well, now I feel like I really don't know if I like this game or not.
That doesn't
Because,
really, it doesn't add to it. It just makes
randomness,
it so
roll for it.
I can see why you haven't beat the game, because that actually is like
Very
extremely powerful
important.
mechanic. Like in fact, the primary way you use the die when you have not just the one that you draw in, from the deck and that exhausts itself, but when you bank up like 40 of these things and there's like abilities to like double it along the way, you'll just end up banking up a ton, and then you get to like a mini boss or the boss, and they'll have. And this is the jank. This I really hate this element. The way that they prevent you from being extremely overpowered with this re-rolling anything is they separate health bars up into tiny little health bars. So instead of having one pool of health, there's like 10 pools of like, a certain amount of health. And that way you have to spend 10 rolls of that die in order to reduce that health from like, here's 20 in this health bar down to, zero, one to six, or one to, you can upgrade it one to 20 in some cases. But like, it's just like, yeah, That's all you're doing is you're using that die to reduce those things and then to improve the things on your cards where the values are 1, 2, and 3, essentially. Or maybe eventually once you improve the die, like you might want to risk it for something that's, you know, more, but like that's it. Like that's basically the whole gimmick. And then once you get that, you just save up the die, you use it on bosses to reduce their health, and then occasionally on your own cards. Like it's just like, okay, like
You can also use the dice on your energy pool, which is fun.
You can use the dice on your energy pool. You can use the dice on your dice.
Ooh, baby.
So if you have one die left, you can, or you have two for a charge, I guess. But if you use that on your die, you can suddenly have 6 charges. And so you can just like have that like feed into itself. And so.
Oh, yeah, of course. I didn't think to do that. See, I think, again, I think it transcends a gimmick. I think the one dice thing is pretty nifty.
I just have to like drop off the podcast because I feel like I didn't actually play this game.
Again, I didn't like notice until like maybe it might have been as recently as today, but. Yeah, for like 3 hours, had no idea. And yeah, no wonder I was getting my butt kicked by every mini boss.
I don't know if I ever would have clicked it. I think I would have just continued. Basically, I just kept banging my head against a wall thinking that it had, like, there are so many things that synergize with that, that I was just like, I don't really understand how this is a good strategy. Like, there's a bunch of cards that, this doesn't make any sense. Like, these don't scale. They don't synergize, they don't have any like potential, they're just like bad cards. It's because I was like, oh man, it's so hard. Like, this would be good if I could somehow manage to like draw both the one dice and this card at the same time, but I already used it, so
shucks. Yeah, right. Indeed. Well, it happened to two of us, so maybe in the next update I should consider a little tooltip that just pops up and is like, hey, you know, you haven't used your relic in a while, don't forget. Yeah. That's part of the localization.
These charges really build up quickly, like even though I'm using the dice. Like, also, that was the other thing, so I thought it used those charges whenever you rolled the one dice. So there'd be many times where I wouldn't use it. And, you know, maybe that one is more on me. I never noticed the number going down. I just assumed that it did.
I feel for you.
I think coming back to the health bar thing, I can't think of a better way to balance it, because clearly, like, in this, I hesitate to call it a gimmick, because my gut instinct is that it's more complex than that. But like in this game world of like any number on the screen can be re-rolled, that, yeah, I mean, obviously like the cheese strategy is just re-roll the HP bar and then like one shot them. And unless like all of like, unless there's some kind of, you know, when you use the one die, there's like a corruption mechanic, or the purple mist spreads at an alarming rate. And then like, oh, there's a danger to doing that. Then like, yeah, obviously I'm just going to like whittle them down to one HP, or like go from like have their HP bars go from like 80 down to, let's say, even 20, making the fight substantially easier. Like, there's not like that substantial of a trade-off of doing so. But I can't think of a better way of balancing it other than, yeah, just like segmenting up the HP bars or making the purple mist go faster.
Well, that's the thing, is like you can see it clearly as this is their way of dealing with like the gimmick, because otherwise the gimmick breaks the game. And so it doesn't like just having a bunch of health bars like all together representing their total health. Like, I don't know, like that might make sense if there was like arms and legs and you could blow off an arm and blow off a leg, but it's just like
you know what they should have done. Oh, they should have had the health pools all be separate little dice.
You're not like that. What do you mean?
Like, this monster has 8d20 health that rolls, all the numbers add up, and then you like chip away at each one, or
like an actual D&D stat block.
Yeah.
You're actually bringing up a good point here, because like another gimmicky way that they get around change every number on the screen is some numbers are just icons. And so like, you know, 2 energy would be like an icon for 2 energy. So you can't like make that change. And like certain things that they don't want you to fuck with, they just like write, you know, the words out, or they give you icons. And so it's just
I like that. I think it's unless you want this gimmick to be like the whole game and nothing else, like there's no way that you can get around the other ways that you can get around this, I think, would be worse. Be like, okay, rather than having one big boss, you have like a million tiny minions. And then you can't, and then you have no AoE ever because you can't have that. Like, I think that you need some way of, if you want this to be like a large part of your game, you need ways to have it like tweak so that it's not every part of your game.
I got a solution. Real simple. No dice. Change the name of the game.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
And
it's an Irish game now.
Well, no. And then, I mean, there's just so many other things I would say, like, on top of this, like, get rid of all the bad stuff. And the bad stuff includes, like, the dice. I think the dice is stupid. The bad stuff includes the class selection. The class selection is something I got a big problem with it because, so all the colors are, like, for the archetype of this, all the colors are related to this. And so when you're choosing, like, you choose three orbs, essentially, out of five different colors, and the orbs are different colors, and then you put them all together, and that gives you a class, and the class has its own kind of, like, base relic sort of effect. But what that means is that everything is just, essentially, you're given the, like, yes, if you want the powerful deck, use this archetype. And, like, it becomes a strategy where it's like, oh, get rid of all the, like, if you have three colors, the best strategy is to get rid of the other colors and just focus on one color. Hmm. And that's, like, the big problem is that they tell you exactly what the archetypes are instead of, let's say, you know, a great game like Slay the Spire, where it's like, there's not color coding where it tells you, oh yeah, all these things go together. You just have to experiment and find that out for yourselves. Whereas, like, the blue deck is just like, oh, it's all these reload things. And here's some bonuses for reload. And just, like, the synergy is so strong. Like,
so the orbs are not analogous to Slay the Spire starting characters. That's kind of what I got the vibe of.
No, they're just like, they are, this is the pool of cards that you will get, is essentially what that decides.
Uh-huh.
And so for all the cards that you have unlocked in each of those pools, it groups them all together and it's just like, all right, there you go. And so the strategy, because of the meta progression, is such a big part of this game. Is like, yeah, a lot of the nodes that you get in this kind of a tree research thing, which we can talk about, is like, yeah, this will add three cards to your deck. But, like, if those cards are bad, or if you know that, like, you know, which ones to avoid because you played the game before, you might be like, yeah, actually, I want to keep my deck very tight, and I'm only going to expand this one archetype down this path. Then it's just like, that is the most powerful build. You just keep doing that over and over again, and you just win. And that was my I did the blue deck three times in a row. It was super reliable. Always got the things that made it work because the deck is so small in the beginning. And it's just like, why would I want to add more cards? I mean, it's just like, this is already, like, just dominating.
And it's as simple as that, folks. That is three easy, simple steps to success in Diceomancer as presented by Will. Well, I don't know enough about the inner workings and the mechanics of this game to argue it. It's, that sounds like a very fair,
thank you.
An
Thank
accurate you. analysis that, yeah, you're not, that you're incentivized to only follow, you know, one particular upgrade tree.
I don't think you can get rid of the dice, though. If there's not dice in this game, it's just a worse Slay the Spire.
I am turning it into Slay the Spire. What I'm saying, what I want to say is, like, build on the thing that you're doing, like the first person element. I'm not going to design your game for you. I'm already busy with that, but make it your own somehow. Like, take Slay the Spire as a base game, pull some
and
stuff
put
out.
Dice
what's
in
the
it.
Model?
I feel like they're already following your advice.
Slay the Dice. Dice the Spire.
I mean, there's an acronym. I forgot it was ECCG, or it's like, you want to eliminate something, you want to create something, you want to reduce something, and you want to increase. I don't remember the exact acronym. This is all from, like, business strategy thing, but, like, that is a strategy for building products. Like, makes a lot of sense in the context of I think turning a Slay the Spire into your own thing.
Boo business, boo.
Well, I like the dice, but again, I admit that that type of extra random element is not going to be for everybody. Now, my beef with the class system is that I don't like the sage. I don't understand the sage. I don't know what's going on with the sage guy. Why is the sage? Why is he armed to the teeth? Why is he got?
Yeah, why
does
the sages think guns and crossbows and?
I've got some
pipe
sagely advice for you right here. All six cylinders. I mean, a cylinder of six shots. I was stinking really bad and having not a good time banging my head against the wall. Part of the reason was because I wasn't using the dice mechanic in the top left hand corner. Once I got the Berserk deck, I love the Berserk deck. What did y'all have a chance to play?
I played around with it for a little bit, and I did get a reasonably broken combo going that I thought, okay, like, I can see I can see the appeal here, where like once you get that broken combo going and it just starts kind of taking off, like yeah, like that felt super satisfying. It ran out of steam eventually just because I like biffed it and like rolled like ones and I didn't really understand what I was doing at the time,
You
but
rolled
I
ones,
was
and that felt really good, though. That was a
oh yeah,
good
definitely. And
that was a good experience
and other
in
people were
defense.
able to laugh at my misfortune, which made it all the worthwhile. And yeah, like I could see how that was interesting. I played around with the green deck some, didn't think that that was as interesting, but only did it once. And yeah, I think like I can kind of like echo Will's sentiment a little bit of like I wish I wasn't like so boxed in with like the initial starting classes as they were. Like you're presented with five orbs and three slots, and the combinatorics should be like, well, you should have 10 different classes. I'm like, but you're restricted. I don't know if this is part of a meta progression unlock, but like you're restricted with like the purple and the gray orb, and you can only flip out the blue or like red or green ones to start with. But yeah, I mean, like I thought that like those three classes were distinct enough in their play styles to make it at least interesting.
You can switch out eventually. You have to keep the purple orb no matter what,
No, that's not
but you can
true.
switch out the.
Eventually, like once you go down the meta progression far enough, then you can start to remove some of the other orbs. And
Yeah,
so,
you can have like purple and blue and red.
well, I'm saying you can remove the, if I
I
recall,
don't think
well,
you can remove purple.
actually, you know, I didn't get quite to the end of it. I assumed you could, because eventually, once you get down the meta progression far enough, you can remove like one of the second orbs or whatever. But like, I think my hunch would be, because that was like a central orb and the last one seemed like, oh yeah, you probably can remove it. I don't know. I
I'm
guess the
looking at
dice.
the various classes or whatever, and there's nothing that seems to suggest that you can remove the purple orb.
All right, well, there you
Which
go.
case it shouldn't exist. Like it
Yeah,
should just
why have it in there? And you try and
it
drag it, and it says you can't do that. And it's like, oh, that
because
sucks.
you've been
It
corrupted by the purple orb's power, and until you can get to the central city and cast that die into the fire, you'll
should
never be
cast your
free.
fishing rod. Yep, your line.
Or at
Yeah, you
least I
have to
wish.
have
I
the
mean,
purple win no matter what.
like so the rest of us never were not quite as Ascension 20 get good scrub skilled as Will was to get to like the final boss of so like your act one, your act two, act three kind of structure. You're going from the plains, that's kind of like the biome that we were talking about in the tutorial. Then you go into the forest where Woody and the mushroom people attack. Very good art and vibes there. Then you go to the city. You get to the city gates, and it's a very like medieval Zelda kind of vibe to it. But like the creatures in the city are just like, what sort of just like weird nightmare have I stumbled upon? Where like, yes, like I understand what a drooling wolf is. I can understand a ninja squirrel who's blind in one eye. Makes perfect sense. You see it in fairy tales all the time. What the hell is
Classic
this
trope.
like? And yeah, you have the classic trope of the weird amalgamation of like strange furniture creatures that have like amalgamated together.
Oh.
I think like I've only gotten to the city once, and the creatures that I encountered there were substantially different and bizarre to the rest of the game. Will, do you haven't much click down on that?
I don't remember any of them. I mean, I played
Okay.
it like the first week, and then I'm like, okay, I got it. And I stopped, and so I can't really recall anything in the city. I remember the end boss somewhat, and there might be multiple ones, but like I can't recall.
Because the end boss, if I remember from my scrolling through YouTube speedrun videos, is like, is it like you're literally breaking the fourth wall of the game? I remember there's being like a transparent like crack in the fabric of the universe that you're fighting or something.
I don't remember that particular aspect. I just remember that the main big difference is that instead of its health bar being like something where you have to work it down, you actually once it gets up to 1,000, like essentially health, that's when it dies. And so you're going from essentially, nothing da up to 1,000. So this way, it completely like turns your like use your dice to reduce their HP mechanic on its head, and instead you just have to do a lot of damage.
Interesting.
Sounds pretty wild. Well, I mean, you guys love this, weird meta fourth wall breaking crap like in Inscription. So it sounds like it's right up your alley. No, I did get to the town, but I don't know. It sounds kind of wacky and far out. Amalgamation of chairs, you say?
I mean, like the enemies
that's from far out for
from Act
sure.
3 felt super different, and
Interesting,
like
interesting.
I felt like I was progressing through some kind of interesting narrative, but when it felt really bad to lose in this game, and that's something that I think like weighs pretty heavily against it. Where like, you know, previous episode Noida, you know, like you just like turn around a corner and you are just immediately dead for seemingly no reason. You're like, okay, I'm not entirely sure what happened there. I'm very interested in starting a new run almost immediately, though, because there's all sorts of wild nonsense that I can get up to in less than 2 minutes. It feels like in this game, the ramp up to getting to that wild nonsense takes too long. And I know that like there's a supreme amount of that wild nonsense because there's a lot of people hunting for that beat the game in less than 30 minute speedrun achievement. I guess like so. Like Will, Colin, when you guys are playing Slay the Spire, how long does like an average, like I just want to like cruise through, just like beat it, no problem, like Ascension Zero run take? Like 20, 30 minutes?
Well, I mean, it depends on how. I mean, I'd say like 40 minutes on average if you're going to beat the heart.
How about a non-heart run?
A little less than that.
Okay. and like for Monster Train also, like that, I feel like Monster Train is maybe a little bit faster. It feels a lot faster, but it feels like if you lose in Monster Train, it's like, oh, like I can get back up to that nonsense ramp pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Likewise with like Slice and Dice and like Luck Be a Landlord or something. For this one,
I mean, Monster Train especially, like the scaling is really fast. So like you don't you maybe not got you're not getting back to where you were when you lost, but you feel like you're getting better quickly. You don't feel the sense of like, ah, my deck sucks.
Yeah, and I feel like there was the one quote the build that Will educated us about with the Sage, where you get a bunch of cards that have the reload mechanic, you get the reload gun or gun card, and then that like builds up this busted synergy. There's another one with the That's Handy card and Beacon that triggers these miracle effects. Just like, oh, if you happen to draw the card, it triggers something. It feels like the mechanics of the cards are just like slightly too similar to how they operate in Slay the Spire. Like I get that they're trying to go for something different, but it feels like, I don't know, just like too close to Spireism, maybe? Am I wrong? Like Monster Train feels very different, but
I mean, I felt like the reload, I mean, there's no reloading mechanic in Slay the Spire, where like
right.
Once you spend it, you have to spend a turn like reloading it. So that, I mean, I have to give him credit. Like that is a new novel idea, which I think is interesting. And like I can very easily imagine that being like in like a downfall, you know, which is a mod for Slay the Spire. This could be like another sort of like character based on reload. So I do think it's that at least that particular one is an interesting archetype. And I think there's a bunch of others I didn't explore because again, I think on a fourth gameplay, I had to save like halfway through, and then I opened it up the next day, and I'm just like, it hurt me, and I'm like, oh, I have no interest in doing this, and so I just didn't play the other, you know, play styles. But
yeah, that's not a good sign for the game.
Yeah, it just didn't grab me.
Whereas, I have a big question.
Yeah,
the map, the FTL style node map, are the nodes the same every time? Is the structure of the map the same every time? Am I crazy?
No, but between acts, like the acts have similar structures. And so like the city, for instance, has like a structure where there's like a bunch of straight lines that are really long. And so that one's the one that's encouraging you to go like really far out and then backtrack a little. And like you get a little bit more of like a reason to backtrack and do other things and play around with the fog more. But yeah, it is randomized every time.
Well, because I remember seeing the Act 1 like node map structure, and it's very kind of like normal. And then like in the middle chunk, there's like a sector that you can like maybe do more of like a circle.
I mean,
in.
It's procedurally generated with like those kind of like dynamics included. Just
okay.
Like how in Slay the Spire, you don't see an elite until at least the fifth level. And you don't get repeats of like campfires. And so there's a lot of rules that they're using to generate it, but it is generated randomly.
Yeah, I like it looked suspiciously similar like every time on Act 1 where I'm like, this isn't just the same, like literally like the structure, like the nodes on the tree are different, sure, but it seemed very suspiciously similar maybe a little too similar between, because like all the ones for FTL are like sometimes like alarmingly bad with how different they are, like getting you boxed into a corner with a whole bunch of nebulas and stuff. But it is different. It's very obviously very visually different.
It
And I
might be
don't
more
know.
narrow. Like Slay the Spire is a 7x15 grid.
Of course.
Of course, I mean, like, as everyone knows. And so, like, this one, I feel like it might be like five, in
And it's a
terms of its
beautiful
width.
thing.
So I'm not sure exactly, but it feels like,
Slim.
yeah, it feels a little slimmer. I could be wrong.
Well, I have a big question too about this. So for hey, everybody's playing Balatro. Tons of people are being introduced to deck builders for the first time. Where do we rank this game in terms of how likely would any of us be to recommend this to someone who has played Balatro and now they want to stretch their wings and they want to try some more deck builders?
I would almost suggest this as some like to play this before playing. I think this is a really good gateway game into roguelike deck builders because
Wrong.
like well like gateway in the sense that like cute art style like gives you the kind of like general sense as to like oh like here's how to like deal with randomness and stuff. And yeah, if like you discover a broken build, you can like run pretty far with it. I don't know that I would say like 100% all the achievements in this game first before jumping to any other one. But if you've never played one before and you're like, oh, this has like a very appealing, I could see this doing very well on the Nintendo Switch with like a very like broad kind of like audience appeal to it. It's very cute. It, you know,
I
it's
don't know if it'd be a better game, but I think
no.
it might be an easier sell.
Sure. Yeah. But yeah, if I had to like, no one's played a roguelike deck builder before. If I had to recommend as their first experience this or Monster Train, I would maybe lean this, even though I think Monster Train's the much better game.
Well, I mean, that's a strange situation where you can only recommend one of those two, because we all know the only game we should recommend, at least as a first game, which is
You're
the
right,
best.
Slice and Dice,
Well,
the
I
objectively best.
mean, like, that's a good game, but no, it's not the one
I mean,
you need to.
there's other
Can
factors
I?
here, though. Let's assume that there is a less than 100% chance that your recommendation will be heeded, and
Impossible.
say, I think that you like Slay the Spire looks like a more hardcore game.
I'm going to read you guys a
Or a
quote. This is
tower.
a message I got from someone this morning. This is someone that I think we're chatting in some kind of a subreddit about roguelike games, and we just ended up having an actual conversation via webcam once. And so I told him, "Hey, you should play Slay the Spire." That's good, of course, because that's what I recommend to everyone. And so his and this is exact quote. So I've spent a good chunk of time messing around with Slay the Spire. One, it's awesome. Two, I can totally see how it's an incredible model for what you're building, because it's related to a different game that I'm building. But like, it's everyone who plays it loves it without exception.
Right, but would if no one like take this as a fork to that, if someone has never played a tabletop board game before, would you recommend them chess or Go to start, or would you recommend them like a cutesified version of checkers?
No, oh, gross. I'm not going to be like, oh, yeah, play some chutes and ladders. That'll get you. No, play a fun game. Yeah, of course. Chess. I mean, sure. That's a fun game. And as long as you have someone that's at your level, then it's extraordinarily fun. If you're trying to play a GM.
I would not recommend any of those games. I'd recommend a real board game.
Yeah, I mean, I would too. But what's a real board game to you, Colin?
Crokinole.
Terraforming Mars,
Clue,
Gloomhaven.
Dungeons and Dragons, Clue, the
Anything by
many forms of
Friedman Battlefar, what
Monopoly.
is it? Battle for North Africa?
Oh
Campaign for
no.
North Africa.
Campaign for North Africa. Yeah,
That's a
e
bunch of
easy.
goddamn nerds in here. God.
A good gateway game. So yeah, I feel like a
Campaign
good
for North
gateway game.
Africa is a
Oh,
notorious game
Twilight
that takes like
Imperium.
2,000 hours.
Well, notoriously, it was developed as like maybe almost a joke where the designer was like, oh, I didn't actually intend for anyone to play this.
And no one has.
Oh,
But I
golly.
think that's my point. I think like
Okay, but
Dysomancer.
it's at least, it's in the conversation of like, hey, maybe we don't want to just, jet you, rocket you all the way to the top of the absolute best pinnacle of gaming. Maybe save that so you can truly, appreciate it. Maybe try some of these other games,
Or try Slay
potentially.
the Spire, and if you bounce off that, try Dysomancer. Like,
Isomancer, but get rid of the dice. Also, we don't like losing. We don't like the randomization, and there's too many dick jokes. But with a few tweaks, it's a perfect game.
So I'm trying to find a negative review in Steam so I could have a counterpoint, and I just keep scrolling, and I haven't found one yet.
Which is amazing that, like,
I don't think anyone has ever written a negative review for Slay the Spire. They may have given a thumbs down, but I don't know if they've actually written a review because they know their opinions are wrong.
Well, I mean, it's so the most
damning one I can find is "It's all right" from someone who has 3,000 hours on record.
Well, the problem is,
it's all
like,
right.
You're scrolling through the Slay the Spire, and I'm trying to vamp here while I pause.
All right, here we go. Hey, check this out. This rouge-like deck builder with appealing art style, that should already tell you what you're in for. What?
Okay, here we go.
Rogue-like deck builder with a rouge, by the way.
From Barnacle Collective, as much fun as a slot machine, thumbs down, 52 hours.
Ooh.
If I'm not mistaken, last update for this game was in 2022. As other people, I experienced performance issues in the form of, quote, stutters. No mention solution helped, so no recommendation from me. Thumbs down from Cali, 8.6 hours.
I mean, to be fair, that is very frustrating. What
I like how this podcast is now about Slay the Spire. And says,
every podcast episode.
What do you mean you say now?
Yes.
I mean, we joke about how we've mentioned it in every single episode.
Oh, here's a review we got here. One of about six 10 out of 10 games I've ever played in my life.
Oh, yeah,
masterfully done. I'm working with data from Spirelocks to cluster the winning decks into Personas because I
that
love
guy
thinking
sounds
about
like
it
an
so
extreme
much.
Geek.
My man's daydreaming about. No, of course, Will. Sorry.
Mine. Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a good review. Because I love thinking about it so much. What's good about this game?
It was basically my master's thesis. It one of my classes. Like, I just focused on taking the data from the spire logs and doing the clustering. And it's like,
right. Everybody.
Best thing.
Yep. There we go. Very excellent. Sorry. Anyway. yeah. Well.
Dice
Omancer. What else we got?
I've cleared out all my notes about all my gripes here, and so I think it's well covered from my point of view.
Rock my entire thought process of this game has been derailed by the fact that I didn't play it right.
Well,
I've removed my score from our spreadsheet and just put in a question mark.
I was perusing the Chinese translated wiki for this game, and I think if I'm understanding this right, I think I just uncovered another like eye-popping mechanic that I never thought to try.
Oh.
I think I might have to go and test this after we hit the stop recording button, or if someone wants to boot it up right now and try this. I think you can open up the in-game encyclopedia and re-roll the numbers for all the enemies in there.
What?
I think if I'm reading this right, where it says, quote, after unlocking the, quote, world dice thrower, maybe that's a different
yeah,
item.
That must be a different one.
Okay, you can modify the numbers in the battle encyclopedia. In the encyclopedia during battle, but you cannot modify the card illustrations. Damn! It is recommended that novices explore this aspect by themselves, and sometimes you will feel suddenly enlightened. You need to enter the battle encyclopedia first and then click on the dice to use it. So, I like, when they mean you can reroll any number you see on screen, they pretty much mean it.
Yeah, it's also how you change the dice. The mouse sensitivity is through a dice roll. includes the
volume.
Yeah,
you actually can't... exit the game until you roll nat one.
Wait, isn't there a number next to how many dice rolls you have?
Yeah, so in theory, like, if
you could just roll it infinite times, yeah?
No, it's not. It's not.
Well,
it's capped.
No, because I think the
so
one
recharge,
die uses
right?
Two charges. So if you if you roll a nat one, then that ends the sequence. But yeah, in theory, like, you can, like, one of the gameplay loops is, like, using the activated relic one die to, like, burn down everyone, all the enemies, like, HP bars, and then use the card one die to recharge the relic.
Yeah.
Which I thought was neat. I thought also what was neat was, like, as you progress through the acts and, like, you upgrade your one die from a D4 to a D10? D6? D10?
D6 to a D10.
Yeah. And then to, like, a D20 for Act 3, Like, I thought it was very clever how that impacted my gameplay decision making of like, well, now, like, instead of rolling this like 1d4 to alter the enemy's damage, I'm not going to have them do 20 damage to me, although I definitely accidentally did that a couple times. It felt like it repositioned my thinking in a clever way of like, okay, the dice is bigger now, so now I have to focus on different things to reroll.
Yeah.
For sure, for sure.
Rerolling
I
their
think it's
health
pretty
pool
interesting.
stops being quite as good. You can't reliably get them down to like 3 hit points.
Yeah, but I mean,
For
like, their
sure, for
health
sure.
pool is still like big enough that like you're rerolling it from like 80 down to 20, so it's still useful even
Yeah.
if you land a nat 20. But you know,
Yeah. Here's
did you get?
another fun little use of the dice. In keeping not upgrading my dice and keeping it tiny. I was doing a berserker run where I would use my one dice to re-roll the amount of injury damage I was taking. So that was kind of fun. I think it's a pretty nifty gimmick, that's for sure.
But
Well,
not nifty enough for you to want to play, apparently. So,
I mean, I got a good 6 hours in it. Yeah.
I think if
Well,
this,
I think I think we got to just do the ratings now so I can go. Can leave the pod and go play it more, see what it's like, and then I'll give it the real rating next time.
rock and roll. Very good. Well, hey, I'll actually I started this off the last couple times. Somebody else go. Let's roll for it. One, two, three,
Yes.
four. All right, I got my metal d20 here. I've rolled a
All right,
20.
Will, get out your
Sorry, Colin,
d20.
that's you. Oh, okay, I see.
Will, do
It's a
you have
roll
a
off.
d20?
Might
We don't have
be.
a d4
It's in the
within
other
arm's reach
room.
somewhere.
Well, I mean, we can do the
Hold on.
math, but man.
Will, I'm gonna roll for you.
Why can't
You're
I just use I have Excel open right here, and I have it equals rand between ready. I
Ooh,
just did
okay.
Google
Nice.
1d4 and I got a three.
Wait,
So
1d4. Oh, I was gonna roll d20.
I see. Well, we've
Is
well, this
higher
is
first or last?
I'm just going clockwise around the Zoom screen
Yeah,
here.
I went
All
by
right.
Scott, just roll a dice and tell us who plays.
Okay,
Hello.
the Google Dice has said three, which clockwise is Colin.
Okay. I give this game a question mark, and or a one. I'm gonna give it a D12.
Nice.
I think so. Like, I'm gonna say it's wow, I rolled a D12 and I got a 10, so it's a 10 out of 10 game.
Baby. Oh, that is a shit way of determining
Actually, a
No,
10 out
no,
of 12 is an 8.333 repeating.
no. No, this could have been the first
Ooh.
11 out of 10 game,
Oh, okay. That makes more sense.
if it got lucky. No, I mean, I didn't particularly enjoy it, but I feel like I genuinely misunderstood a core mechanic. So my guess is that I'll like it more if I play it with the right mechanics. But it does annoy me quite a bit that I didn't realize that. Like, I mean, I'm gonna have to open it up and like poke around, but I don't know how long it would have taken for me to realize that. And I probably would never have realized it because I would have stopped playing because I was like, oh, this is just a weird, poorly balanced game where you need to get like some weird random luck to get to draw the right cards to get through. Like I managed to get I almost got through the first boss without using any of those dice rolls. I was like, man, this feels like an OP build, and I still was like, I can't fucking get through this boss. So,
Yeah, the health rules are that really helps.
yeah, I went through all of his health, except for the last bar.
Yep.
I got him down to 2 hit points, and all of his health. So, yeah, I'm gonna give it a question mark, TBD. I gave it a 5.7 when we started the episode. I'm guessing it'll be slightly higher than that by the time we everything's said and done.
Right on. I'll go next here. Just to reiterate, quick disclaimer, I joined this podcast late, and at the time of me joining, we were stack ranking them, and so I had a weird review system, but then they changed it on me, folks. They totally switched it around, and now we're
We
just doing
changed it
like
for you, Andrew.
regular out of 10. Well, you know, and so my ranks are my numbers, they don't matter. They matter even less than everyone else's rating numbers. All right, so check it out. This game, I don't especially love deck builders, but once
Why pick
I
one? No.
finally got a that's why I have it. Well, just to spite you, Will, Counter Spike. Another game coming from Purple Robe Games. I'm gonna upgrade this dice mechanic from the one dice mechanic from novelty to innovative mechanic. I think it adds quite a bit, and there's a lot of interesting usage that really kind of exercises your brain in a fun and unique way that I've not seen in another game. You combine that with the quite striking and enjoyable art style, animations, and of course first person shooting effects. This is a game that I would definitely recommend to people, maybe casual dice, deck building gamers. Hey, you know what we haven't talked about this whole time is the dice rolling animations. Super important. I really harped on this one during the Omega Bowl, that Slice and Dice had physical physics objects rolling dice that actually looked halfway decent. How does the D20 roll animation look in this game? That's pretty good. It's honestly probably better than D&D Beyond, which is like atrocious. So that is that a pretty good dice rolling effect is going to also speak to the score that I'm giving it, which is it's my new number 25, scoring 5.71 points. Who's next?
According to the dice roll, Will is.
All right. Well, these scores obviously they matter a lot. Here's the correct value: 6.5. It's a 6.5 game. It's not a great game. I do think the dice is a gimmick. The die is a gimmick, and that puts it in the company of Stacklands, Streets of Rogue, Grefflands, Tales of Taj Mahal, and World of Horror. If I'm trapped on a desert island and I've got nothing to do, except, you know, tic-tac-toe in the sand or this game, I'll probably play this game. That's how I feel about it.
The ringing endorsement. All right, I'll bring us home here. Where did that Google Sheet tab go? Dysomancer for me, I think 7 out of 10. I think I had this rated higher, and then it kind of tumbled down the rankings the more that I played it. It just kind of felt like there was a lot of cognitive load that I had to do every time, and at the end of a long day, you know, there's times where unraveling that puzzle will be super satisfying, and other times where I think it's just like, you know, like the art style can only really carry it for so long. I think the art style for this game is great. I think it adds a ton of charm to it. And I think it really adds to like the vibe coziness of like the fairy tale nature that you're in it. And
the music's pretty good too.
Yeah. I thought the music was pretty good. Maybe could have stood to be a little longer before looping, but I think it does kind of also reinforce that that whimsical notion to it. I liked the dice mechanic the more and more that I sort of play with it, and I can definitely see how when you get a really solid broken build going, how it can just like spiral out of control and get to that sort of monster train level of nonsense. I just kind of wish it did it faster. But yeah, I can totally see how this would be a fun thing to explore. If like, oh, you know, I've put it like a bunch of time into Slay the Spire, put a bunch of time into Monster Train, this would be another good kind of thing. I don't know if it has the legs to last as long, but certainly interesting. And yeah, definitely worth a look. Yeah, so I think similar games to this, we kind of talked a little bit about the itch.io precursor to Dysomancer called Dice is the Way. I also think if Dysomancer was listed in early access, maybe I would give it a little more leeway. But anyway, other similar games, Astraea Six-Sided Oracles, I think does dice and drawing mechanics maybe a little better with randomness mitigation. There's a game called Rogue Lords that I think is interesting, and maybe also I think that one from an art style perspective. Actually, why do I have this on here now that I'm looking at it? It has some more kind of like number mitigation on screen type stuff. So kind of taking the same sort of mechanic. Monster Train, we mentioned a whole bunch. There's a game called Betrayal at Club Low, which is a very short, interesting game about like I think there's an aspect of like manipulating people with dice in a way. There's a game Meteor Fall Krumit's Tale that has a similar kind of whimsical aesthetic to it. There's Rogue Book, which is highly recommended from people in the interwebs, co-designed by a one Richard Garfield of Magic the Gathering fame, as a as Andrew mouths all sorts of interesting stuff. And then
Holy moly.
there's a game called Dice and Fold that I think also kind of involves dice and card mechanics as well. So give those a check out at some point. But yeah, that's gonna wind down. We're rolling a one on our energy levels here for the show as we wind down here. Send, you know, roll your dice for sending us emails to grogpodzone@gmail.com. Mastodon grogpod at gamedev.place. And actually, while I have meant to do this last time and I biffed it, yeah, like we have another listener request week coming up fairly soon,
Ooh.
after Andrew's pick. So, you know, use that, you know, you're listening to this somewhere on Web 3.0, right? Comment below. There's got to be some kind of comment box. What game do you want us to see play? We'll add it to the list, and we'll give it its due diligence. So grogpodzone@gmail.com. Our Mastodon is grogpod@gamedev.place, which I need to post more of our like memeing that we do in the Discord to there. I feel like we've been pretty on point with our images and memeing going on, but to give people a kind
Yeah, not to brag about our Discord, but
of
it's pretty good.
And by our Discord, you of course just mean the four of us in a disc, like a
Private
chain. So
channel. Yeah,
it's not like there's a
it's
Discord where you're missing out
no,
on all of the fun behind the scene features.
The
Good point of
tens of
clarification, yeah.
listeners that would be willing to sign up for a Patreon. Yeah, so grogpod.zone, all of the stuff all in one place as you would expect. Colin, your next pick, what is a D6 from this game have in common with the game that we're playing next?
Oh, it's cubes, baby. It's Cube Chaos. I don't even really know what or how to describe this game, seeing as I haven't played it yet. And just from looking at the Steam, I don't know what it is, but I'm excited. It says something about giant armies, factories, self-replicating murder crabs, RTS slash roguelike slash something, and with extremely low graphics. It looks like some sort of RTS Worms type game. I'm not sure what it is. Scott recommended it and I wholly endorsed it, so I'm
It's like,
ready.
what if Conway's Game of Life had MS Paint style graphics and just like extreme visual overwhelmingness or after 5 minutes?
Yeah.
What if? And we're gonna find out
Yeah.
next episode.
Yeah, we will find out. But to play us out this time are some tunes to accompany Little Purple Riding Hood's crossbow adventures through the forest.